The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Today is the last day of early voting in the San Antonio city elections. You can cast a vote for mayor, city council, and there are races and other local, municipal, and school district elections. And when you are a voter, things seem pretty straightforward. You show up with your state ID, you get ushered to the voting machine, and you touch screen the candidates and propositions that you support. But there's so much going on behind the scenes that most voters don't see. And there are vulnerabilities to hacking, voter fraud, and direct attacks on our democracy. The Texas legislature is moving forward with an emergency bill, SB 9, that proposes some fixes that could change how we vote in Texas and could make elections more secure from fraud. But there are also provisions in the bill that critics call straight up voter suppression. To find out more, I was able to speak with the author of SB 9, Texas Senator Brian Hughes, a Republican from Mineola.
Senate Bill 9 is the result of the Senate Select Committee on Election Integrity. Over the last 2 years, this committee heard testimony from prosecutor, law enforcement, election administrators, volunteers, and the Senate State Affairs Committee also took testimony on these topics. And so based on what we learned through those hearings and through other folks we heard from, Senate Bill 9 came along to address some of the ways that people are cheating in elections. And so the heart of Senate Bill 9 is, of course, paper backup, a paper system. 60% of Americans today vote on some kind of a paper backup system. This is one area where Texas is really out of step. Some of our counties have paper, some do not. And so Senate Bill 9, the primary goal is to put in place in Texas a paper backup system so that if there's a need for a recount, there's a tangible record that we can look at. And beyond that, we also address some of the ways that, that we've learned people are cheating. Much of this fraud is taking place in primaries. So this is Democrats versus Democrats, Republicans versus Republicans. Also, these are issues in local elections, school board elections, city elections, where the vote turnout is much smaller and fraud can have a big effect on the outcome. So this cuts across party lines, racial lines, geographic lines. This is about making sure that our electoral process is fair. Every vote counts. And nobody cheats.
Listening to the hearing that you had, gripping testimony about vote rigging happening in Starr County, particularly when it comes to mail-in ballots and how there's also assistance to disabled people, some people grabbing up all those mail-in ballots and then filling them in and being able to swing elections. Is that happening and is that a concern?
It's really troubling. Mail ballot fraud, we've heard anecdotally that's taking place for a long time. Now we're seeing more evidence of it. As you said, the district attorney from Starr County told us what he had seen. His chief investigator also testified. There's another case in Longview in East Texas where I represent where there's similar concerns and evidence that the mail ballot process is out of whack and it's allowing people to cheat. That's being investigated by the Secretary of State's office and the Attorney General's office and also our local district attorney sheriff's office in Gregg County. Same thing is happening in other races in the valley and even in urban and suburban Texas. So, yes, it's a real problem. We've learned that it's easy for people to cheat in this situation. So Senate Bill 9 is aimed at tightening up those areas that are being abused. You know, Texas puts rules in place to make it easier for elderly folks to vote, to make it easier for disabled folks to vote. That's good. We want to encourage that. What we don't want is for people who are not elderly and people who are not able-bodied, people who are not disabled but are able-bodied, to take advantage of those systems and to cheat. And that's really what this is about.
They've turned it into a business. There are people that get paid to round up all of those mail-in ballots. and they're breaking the law.
I'm afraid that's exactly what's happening. And so if someone is cheating, they're going to be held accountable. We make no apology for that. We want every vote to count and the election results to be accurate and folks to not be able to cheat.
Now, this is an omnibus bill. That means there's a whole lot of stuff going on, right?
That's exactly right.
Another issue that you're looking at is securing the vote through the threat of against the threat of cyber hacking.
That's exactly right. We heard testimony from experts, from people who have worked on these machines, from people who have even done counterterrorism work. And it's clear to us that even with the best defenses in place, electronic voting machines are subject to hacking. That's why that paper backup is so important. It might be possible to hack into that electronic system. It might be possible to cheat and mess with the paper record, but it would be virtually impossible for someone to hack both the electronic system and the paper record and to make them line up. So it's just like two-factor authentication that we're accustomed to with our own devices, right, with our cell phones and our computers and software. This is the idea. We want to make it hard for people to cheat.
And you heard testimony that even if these machines are not hooked up to a network or the internet, they are still vulnerable to hacking or even just disruption of their ability to calculate votes, which is enough to, you know, disrupt an election.
There's no question about that. Again, we had heard these things before, but after the sworn testimony that we heard and the investigations that we did, there's no question that these systems are vulnerable to hacking.
Now, other things happening in this bill, people are saying there are measures that are going to make it harder for individuals to register to vote and to vote.
You know, I saw a tweet from a national political figure about a week ago saying Senate Bill 9 was going to make it harder for folks to register and was going to make it harder for the votes to count. And to be blunt, that is simply not true. Senate Bill 9 does not make it harder to register to vote, nor does it say anything about whether votes are going to count. What Senate Bill 9 does do is make sure that people follow the rules, and if people cheat, if people are cheating, they're going to be held accountable.
Now, it doesn't make it easier to vote. It doesn't make it easier to register to vote, right?
This does not change the process for registering to vote. That's exactly right.
But there is a provision here that would increase the criminal penalty for anyone who falsifies voter registration.
That's right. Everything addressed in Senate Bill 9 is already a crime. So it would be misleading for folks to suggest that we are criminalizing conduct that was not already criminal. These acts, cheating in elections, committing fraud, swearing things that are true, then they're not true, those are already against the law. What Senate Bill 9 does is it increases the level of offense for many of these crimes, because we've learned that prosecutors have limited resources and they can only focus on so many crimes. And so they've got to think about violent crimes and DWIs and robberies and property crimes. And so when a prosecutor is determining what case to pursue, they look at the offense level. And so by raising the level of offense for these crimes, we're making it clear that Texas takes these cases seriously. And also we're telling those prosecutors, this is important. You need to develop some resources to prosecute these cases when you have evidence.
But critics of Senate Bill 9 say there's going to be a harsh criminal penalty for anyone who makes a simple mistake like putting in the wrong zip code on the voter registration card.
Yeah, I read that somewhere, and I honestly don't know where that is in the bill, because the bill clearly says you have to knowingly provide false information. For attempting to cast an illegal vote is against the law. That is nothing new. In the case of Ms. Mason, she was on federal felony probation, and when she was sentenced, the judge told her, this is a felony offense. This affects your right to vote. So she knew that she was a felon. And she knew that she hadn't completed all of her terms. And so, honestly, I'm not sure what else there is to that. But if the judge tells you when you are sentenced, this will affect your right to vote, then you're on notice that this will affect your right to vote.
So when she says it was an accident, you don't buy it?
Again, what we're looking at is when someone knowingly violates the law. And so if I know that I'm not a citizen, or I know that I've got a conviction that affects my right to vote, and I still try and vote, I'm breaking the law, and I should be held accountable.
Rosa Ortega, a legal immigrant with a sixth grade education, was sentenced to 8 years in prison for voting illegally in Tarrant County. She says she also mistakenly believed that she could vote.
Ms. Ortega's case was interesting. She lived in Dallas County and had voted there a number of times. Then she moved to Tarrant County, and she filled out her voter registration card, and she did not check the box saying she was a citizen, because she wasn't. So she sent that card in. The folks in Tarrant County contacted her and said, we cannot register you to vote because you're not a citizen. So she sent in another card, and this time she said, I am a citizen. After that, she voted. Honestly, the facts seem pretty clear in that case. When she tried to register the first time and was honest about her citizenship, they said no. So she did another card saying she was a citizen. And I'll just say, in the case there, a jury heard all the evidence, and a jury made that decision about the conviction and about the sentence.
So two individuals who claim they mistakenly voted and they received pretty harsh sentences, 5 years, 8 years. So there's this case on 2018 of Russ Casey. He's was a justice of the peace in Tarrant County, the same county. He faked over 100 signatures on his petition in order to get on the ballot. He was running for justice of the peace as an incumbent. He was given 5 years probation. Why isn't that a crime of the same magnitude, or even worse, because he faked 100 signatures and he's a candidate for justice of the peace trying to get on the ballot?
It certainly sounds like it should be. I don't know all the facts, but I'm with you. That sounds real serious.
So, but there's nothing in your bill that makes it a tougher crime for anyone who fakes signatures in order to become a candidate on the ballot.
This bill is about voting and about the voting process. It sounds like that's something we need to address, but this bill is about voting in that process.
There's also a part of the bill that would allow law enforcement, in order to enforce the law in these areas, to be able to break the law. Can you explain that to me?
Of course. We mentioned before that attempting to cast an illegal vote is a crime. So we learned this actually from a case in New York where the election authority there was doing a sting operation and running through the process, seeing how easy it was to cheat, seeing what was allowed. And to do that, of course, law enforcement officers had to go who were posing as people who were not registered to vote, and then to see if they'd be allowed to vote. Many of them were. And so the point here is, if a law enforcement officer working undercover is posing as an illegal voter, a voter who's not authorized to vote, someone who shouldn't be registered, who's not registered, if a law enforcement officer is posing as someone who is not allowed to vote, and they attempt to cast a vote, that would be against the law if we didn't have this provision in the bill. That's all that's about.
And who do they answer to? How do we make sure that they're not going to abuse that authority?
Well, the only authority that the law enforcement has in this situation is them casting an illegal vote would not be a crime.
Okay. So I'm looking at some of the coverage of SB9. And some of it is not favorable. And I was going to quote this Houston Chronicle editorial: bills such as SB9 are voter suppression efforts, pure and simple. What, from your perspective, are they not getting?
Yeah, I'm disappointed the folks would say that, and it makes me wonder if people have read the bill. There are provisions in this bill that address cheating based on sworn testimony that the committee heard from prosecution, from law enforcement. By the way, Democratic and Republican people testified for and against this bill. It's bipartisan. It's all across the state. This is just making sure that the process works. I will say that provisions of the bill have been taken out of their context and misrepresented, but if you look at what the bill says and how it fits into the existing code, these are reasonable steps we are taking to keep folks from cheating.
Now, Are there any concerns about how to deal with the fact that Texas already ranks among the states with the lowest voter turnout? Some say it's because we make registration so difficult. We don't take electronic registration. We don't have same-day registration. Is there anything, any concerns about what we can do to improve voter turnout in Texas?
We want to do a number of things to make sure that people have opportunities to vote. For example, there's a provision in the bill that talks about when we go from precinct-level voting to countywide voting, we want to make sure that people don't end up with fewer polling places. That's obviously important. Fundamentally, I think if people know their vote's going to count and know that it's going to be recorded properly and know we have a good record if we need to do a recount, if they have confidence in their vote, I think that's going to encourage people to vote. I can't imagine how it could have the opposite effect.
That was Texas Senator Brian Hughes, a Republican of Mineola, talking about SB 9. His bill would change how we vote in Texas. We're taking a break and we're opening the phones. Call in at 210-614-8980 to join our conversation. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about voter fraud and voting rights in Texas. There's a bill in the legislature, SB 9, that focuses on cracking down on voter fraud. It does nothing to make it easier to vote in the state. Texas is one of the worst states for voter turnout. What concerns do you have about voting rights and voter fraud in Texas? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're now joined with Walt Wilson. He's associate professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Cindy Weatherby is with us. She's a voting rights and elections law issue chair for the League of Women Voters in Texas. And also with us is Max Feldman. He's a counsel in the Democracy Program in the Brenham Center for Justice, where he focuses on voting rights and elections. And Max Feldman, you're there.
I am. Thanks for having me, David.
Fantastic. It's great to have you. Cindy Weatherby, let me ask you, if you're available, if you can tell us about what is your take on SB 9, the bill that we've been talking about?
Well, we have a bit of a different view of SB 9 than what you just heard. Yes, there are some things there that we very much wanted. One of our priorities for this legislative session was to increase the improvements, actually modernize our entire election equipment system if possible, but definitely make a big dent in getting new equipment in each of the counties and making sure that all of those things that the senator mentioned, cybersecurity, physical security for that matter, were taken care of. As we understand it, that was one of the last things that made it into that bill and may not survive as it moves forward. But we have a different view of some of the other things that you discussed and some of the things that you didn't discuss. And I won't get into that in detail at this point unless you're interested. But we have concerns. There are many other people around the state and many other organizations who work very hard on a continuing basis to make it possible for every single citizen in our state who's interested. We want them to be interested to vote. So we don't want to do anything that's going to affect that, and some of these things appear to do that.
Max Feldman at the Brenham Center for Justice, your take on SB 9, are you able to kind of look at it and make an evaluation?
Sure. I mean, I think your other guests will be much more expert in the details than I am, let me start at the top. I think the senator in his interview lumped in a few different things under the umbrella of so-called cheating, but it's critical that we distinguish between at least three different types of issues because they demand different kinds of solutions. So the first issue that I want to talk about that Cindy talked about is the security of our election infrastructure. And at the Brennan Center, we agree that there is a need for states to have a paper record that can be audited post-election. So that's good. A second issue that the senator sort of touched upon was fraud against voters, like tampering with absentee ballots. And we've certainly seen a major example of that in North Carolina in this past election. But that's illegal, and it's critical that that kind of fraud be aggressively investigated and punished. The problem here is that there's the third thing that the senator kind of alluded to is fraud by individual voters. Now, that kind of fraud is very rare. So some of the provisions that seem to be addressing that third type of fraud that is so rare are concerning, and especially in view of Texas's recent history of passing laws that are suppressive of voters, I think we have some serious concerns with some of the provisions of this bill, which could lead to intimidation of voters and prevent people from getting to the polls.
So Walt Wilson at UTSA, Department of Political Science, when it comes to Texas, the state of Texas, going through this process of reforming our election process, a lot of trust comes into play, to pick up on the point that Max Feldman just made. But we just went through this voter purge debacle in which the state of Texas is now having to pay $500,000 for the civil rights groups that sued the state over this voter purge coming from the Secretary of State's office. Does that kind of like make it look like there's not a whole lot of trust available and to give the state the benefit of the doubt is that they're going to look after the best interest of the entire population in this endeavor?
No, I think absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the things it points to is, you know, not just at the state level, but the need for Congress to step in and reform our renew our Voting Rights Act. You know, the striking down of the Voting Rights Act in 2013, the Section 4 provision, which would have covered Texas, would have forced this law and many others to be reviewed by the Justice Department before it could be implemented. And without that protection, what we're going to see is, you know, this law, which, you know, provides for lots of criminal penalties. And, you know, I think the senator's attitude about it is sort of a little Pollyannish, and it just doesn't really take seriously the fact that what this does is give tools to government to crack down probably not evenly, but rather somewhat discriminately. And so, you know, what we're going to see is that this is going to, you know, come down hard on people like the individuals you mentioned who got heavy sentences for voting illegally. You know, that's a serious crime, but it's, you know, the punishment is disproportionate. And so, you know, what this is doing, I think, is giving the Republican Party, frankly, one more tool to reduce voting, especially among minority and poorer populations in Texas, and, you know, stem the tide of a changing electorate.
We're going to be taking a break right here. Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. What are your thoughts about voter fraud, voting rights in Texas? 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Voter fraud, voter rights, we're talking about it this afternoon. The number is 210-614-8980. Got a comment from Twitter. This is just another attempt to disenfranchise voters. There is no widespread voter fraud. Statistics have shown it does not exist. Let's go to the phones with Justin. Justin, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I just had a question, had a comment and a question.
Okay.
To me, this seems, you know, very much like a partisan bill that's being kind of slammed together as an omnibus where, you know, it's clear that the prosecutor's power is being adjusted here. I mean, you guys have had Emily Bazelon on the show with her book Charged, and all of this is being slammed into something that is a surefire win that we know that we need to adjust our election system with the ballots and the electronic system. So, I mean, how does it make sense to slam that on together? And was there another way to do this other than including more than what was necessary on what would have been a surefire way to reform our system?
All right. Good point, Justin. So why throw all of this into one big burrito, Cindy Weatherby with the League of Women Voters? Why not take this piecemeal to get it right?
Well, I will say this. This is the Lieutenant Governor's priority bill, And there are many other bills that are doing similar or other more concerning things as well, but this is one that has the imprimatur of being one of the top priorities of the Lieutenant Governor. And in each session, that's what, you know, those first 20 bill numbers are reserved for. So I think that's why this bill is moving along, probably at this point in time.
It's already passed the Senate, right?
It has passed the Senate, yes.
And so this House needs to take action on it.
Mm-hmm. And time is ticking away, and that's why it's been the one that's moved further. I think that's just the reason that it is moving and the others aren't. Now, there have been cases in previous legislative sessions. Similarly, in the last session before this one, Senate Bill 5 was the one that moved forward, and that was the one that increased penalties related to voter ID. So, you know, it's not something out of the ordinary. And as we get closer to the end of the session, this is something that all authors look for. They look for a bill that they think is going to move, and they try to tack on as much as they can. The one thing that we were really interested in seeing was the election equipment section, and that was one of the last things that made it onto this bill. And we've been told that we can't expect that it will survive. So, you know, we're concerned about that. But there are some real disturbing things that are in the bill that were not talked about.
You know, but it's interesting that you're saying that that component may not survive the final bill that gets signed by the governor, because that was the candy coating of the whole thing, that this was going to fix this equipment problem that we have in the state of Texas and provide this paper ballot audit system, the safeguard. And we heard from the Senator Hughes earlier talking that part up, and and then that
We don't talk about the bad things first, do we?
Right, exactly.
We talk about things we think people are going to like.
And let me go to Walt Wilson with a political science department at UTSA.
So with regard to the need to reform the election machines, I do think that that is, you know, as a was just mentioned, sort of the candy coating. I mean, that is sort of the gold standard for being able to secure the election system, which is, you know, an electronic system that allows the tabulation of votes quickly, but one that also leaves a paper trail so that there can be a recount if necessary, and one that reflects the true tally of voting at each polling place. And so, you know, it would be wonderful to see Texas adopt something like that. You know, if you know, as League of Women Voters suspects, this is sort of a bait and switch by the people pushing the bill. That's disappointing. And going back to your previous question about why an omnibus, you know, what we've seen with increasing partisanship in Congress and the legislature as well, is that you see omnibus legislation in highly partisan legislatures where one party, you know, the majority party, wants to ram through its program. And so, you know, historically speaking, omnibus legislation is unorthodox, but it has largely become the norm in our highly partisan era.
Okay, let's go to Chris on the phones. Chris, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. While I was listening, since I, you know, originally posed this, I heard that, I believe his name was Max, speaking of like this, you know, using the voters as leverage, that they're the ones creating this voter fraud. Like, I couldn't agree more. Everything I've read, it's really people hacking in and you know, people collecting the ballots like we've been talking about. But one of the things in San Antonio especially, we don't turn out to vote. I mean, we're single digits on our local elections. But one thing I don't understand, I'd really like, especially the League of Women Voters, to address is, you know, why do we vote every 2 years? I feel like we have 1 year of campaigning and 1 year governing and 1 year of campaigning, and it's just, it's really overwhelming for especially a person like me that follows politics to keep up is who are we voting for and why and what? And, you know, just, I feel like we just voted for this person. Why are we voting for them again? And so, you know, maybe address, like, our voter apathy, you know, it's multifaceted in some of this stuff you're talking about, the suppression and this and that, but Why do we have such frequent elections, especially in Bexar County and San Antonio?
Well, Constitution requires that we elect Congress every 2 years, so there's that. But you would like to have it further away, you know, it's a build up, like the Olympics. It comes every 4 years, and so it becomes kind of exciting.
Well, there's just not so much. I just feel like we have apathy in this city, especially. And I, you know, it's multifaceted, but why? But I think one of the things is our every 2 year election.
Let me get Cindy Weatherby from the League of Women Voters to answer that. What can we do to build up interest?
We have heard people talk about election fatigue, and there are actually bills introduced in this session to try to move most all of the elections to November. There are bills to make November the one uniform election date. I know in San Antonio you've had an addition of special elections as well because, as normally is the case, and Walt may be able to speak to this, you know, your elected leaders move up along the food chain, as it were, so that a state senator may leave unexpectedly and other state representatives may run for that position or vacate another position that is also an elected position. So,
This is a democracy, and democracy doesn't just happen on election day. That may be when, you know, we do stop and we elect people, but this is supposed to be a continuous effort, and not just you know, when it's convenient for people. But you could argue we're not having elections enough. You know, so Walt Wilson, your reaction?
Well, you know, I think the caller is absolutely right that apathy is a problem, but I wouldn't place it all on the voters. I mean, think about the logic of being a city council candidate and knowing that there were 8,000 votes cast in your district last election. Who are you going to start with as you contact voters? Are you just going to randomly draw names, or are you going to go to the voter rolls and see who voted last time and call them? And so, you know, the fact is, candidates and campaigns are not doing a good job at reaching out to voters and mobilizing a larger electorate, and that's a big reason why we see apathy. And then more broadly, the parties are not doing their job in terms of mobilizing people. They're focusing on the likely voters who tend to be older, wealthier, and more conservative. And that's, you know, part of the reason why you see election outcomes that you do in Texas. And so, you know, what we need, I think, if we really want this to be a democratic system, is to find ways to encourage more people to turn out. And, you know, as far as the frequency of elections, I do think that moving all of the major elections to November would be good. We had a pretty brief ballot here in the election going on for mayor and council. Why not move that to November and get a large electorate to choose the city's leaders?
Well, voting turnout is connected also to dynamic response, so that when society goes up over end, upside down, people turn to start voting again, realizing what they do is important. So Max Feldman with the Brenham Center for Justice, are we seeing an increase in voter turnout across the country?
Well, certainly, last year and last year's midterms, it was the highest midterm turnout we'd seen since the beginning of the 20th century, I believe. So we're certainly seeing a lot of voter interest, but, you know, what that shouldn't obscure is that there continue to be efforts to make it harder for people to vote, and we've seen that over the last decade. So, you know, turnout may go up or down in any given election, but we've seen a steady sort of effort in some states to restrict access to the ballot. And that, you know, whether turnout is up or down, that continues to be a problem.
So as more people try to go vote because they may be dissatisfied with what they're seeing with their elected representatives, we're seeing a pushback from the establishment trying to make voting more difficult. Some say that SB 9, the bill that we're talking about this hour, is part of that. They say that SB 9 is a voter suppression bill. The Senator Brian Hughes, Republican, who authored the bill, says SB 9 is here to make voting more secure in Texas. We're going to come back from the break, take more calls. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, back after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, the cop on the beat when it comes to voter fraud and promoting elections in Texas is the Secretary of State. That would be David Whitley. He is the acting Secretary of State. He is yet to be confirmed. This week, he is trying to keep his job. He's meeting with the Democratic senators in Austin, trying to get at least two. He needs two votes for them in order to pass confirmation. Whitney has been under fire since January when his office wrongly flagged tens of thousands of Texans as potential non-citizens to be removed from the state's voter rolls. Let me go around with all of our guests and see your reaction if the Secretary of State acting David Whitney should keep his job. Should we confirm him after this debacle? Cindy Weatherby with the League of Women Voters.
Well, if I had a vote, mine would not be yes. We have lost faith, I think, in Mr. Whitley. He released that nearly 100,000 names, and by the way, also immediately turned it over to the Attorney General, and everyone coordinated in their responses to the public that this was voter fraud without even identifying any of those who had voted improperly. Your information as a voter is sacred and should not be turned over for some sort of a hunt through those. One of the reasons that I know Max Feldman is the League of Women Voters of Texas worked and filed lawsuits to keep our state Secretary of State before Mr. Whitley and Attorney General from turning over all of our voting records to the ill-fated Kobach-Pence Commission, Presidential Commission. And by the way, that information is in Senate Bill 9 as well, turning over voting records, making all people's voting records available to the Attorney General's office. So no, I would say no.
Max Feldman with the Brenham Center for Justice, do you think that David Whitley should not be confirmed?
Well, I don't know that the Brennan Center would wade into these particular confirmation hearings, but I will say that the attempted purge earlier this year was truly outrageous, and you know the speed with which this attempt was retracted and walked back was predictable, given that it's happened in other states before, but fairly extraordinary. And to Cindy's point, the attempt to gin up this voter fraud narrative by putting out these numbers that it quickly became clear had no basis in fact was deeply problematic. So while I won't say that I would vote one way or the other, I do think that is certainly a major stain on his record.
Right. When you say it's happened in other states before, the exact same thing happened in Florida. And so when the state of Texas says we had no idea that this was a flawed process, they didn't do a Google search on what this would happen because it was all right there. Walt Wilson with the Department of Political Science at University of Texas at San Antonio. David Whitney, Whitley, is he incompetent or corrupt? What's the situation there?
Well, I guess I would say he's partisan. I think that much like the Florida case that you referred to, what we're seeing is, you know, kind of a growing number of pieces of partisan legislation that are politically motivated rather than designed to solve any real policy problems. So, you know, with regard to the purge idea, you know, it was instantly publicized and retweeted and so on by prominent Republicans that adds to this narrative that our election system is under attack. And by the way, it's probably non-citizen brown people who are attacking it. And, you know, the media outlets that are going to cover that are not going to cover the retraction. And so, you know, among people who trust those conservative sources, it adds to, frankly, their being misinformed about the state of, fraud or lack thereof.
So whether or not they had to walk this back, the damage was done, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it does damage. And the other thing that it does is intimidate, you know, and create uncertainty. You know,
right.
People who are going to be giving advice in communities of color and especially immigrant communities about whether to participate in elections, the idea is to get those people to say, you know what, you better not take the chance of participating in these elections. You don't want to end up in jail. And that's
right.
Exactly the message it's sending.
Let me go to Paul on the phones. Paul, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
The author of the bill is still there?
No, he's gone.
I really think he should be embarrassed. I read this bill, a month or so ago, and I deemed it probably one of the worst bills in the entire legislature. There are some good things in it that have to do with equipment, and there are other good things in it, but it's like an omnibus bill or whatever you call it. You put in a lot of stuff that you want to get through that wouldn't get through any other way. And it's definitely a voter suppression bill. And in with the apathy we have, we don't need anything that's going to discourage somebody. They're going to be afraid they're going to be a felon or they're going to go to jail. Or in other words, it's a scare the voter bill. And I think it's very unfortunate. And I hope that they will pick some of the good things out of it and use those and let the rest go.
Paul, thank you for the call. Let me go directly to Hannah. Hannah, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I'm a student at UT Austin, but more so I'm an issue advocacy fellow for Move Texas, which is a nonprofit organization that empowers young people through our state through voting rights. And my main question is, couldn't we accomplish this aim of integrity that Senate Bill 9 wants by just modernizing our election system? Like, instead of Senate Bill 9, couldn't we introduce online automatic voter registration, which would eliminate that paper-based registration and the need for deputy voter registrars?
All right, Hannah, thank you for the call. So, Cindy Weatherby with the League of Women Voters of Texas, being able to, these reforms have to come through the legislature. There is no way citizens can do it on their own, right?
That's true. But your caller just made a comment that is something that we would emphasize 1,000 times if we could. And that is, if we joined almost every other state in the country, we're one of 9 left that don't use online voter registration, that would be have a tremendous impact on the integrity of our voter registration rolls. We know from a lot of research that's been done over the last 16 years since other states have been using this process that 1 in 8 paper registration ballots is inaccurate, but that goes down drastically with online voter registration because you enter your own information. Our whole process is so complicated and so non-regimented between the counties. Every one of our 254 counties make decisions about how they deal with voting and how they process registration cards. And then the election itself is put on by volunteers who may get $8 or $10 an hour, but they work once or twice a year. They can't remember our complex system of laws that govern the election process and voter registration as part of that.
Okay, I'm going to another caller. Elizabeth, hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks again, David, for a great show. I would like to know, number one, is there a process whereby all the voter machines in Texas can be certified as honest and accurate in the way they record the vote? And secondly, is it a requirement or could it be a requirement that when a voter goes in to vote electronically, immediately the way they voted is printed out for them to have a copy? Does that exist in the law? And if not, what's the possibility of having that assured? Because we remember the case in Ohio many years ago where if it had not been for some housewives who challenged it, the voter machines would have been bought and they were fraudulent.
Okay, so let's go quickly back to you, Cindy Weatherby, with the League of Women Voters of Texas.
Well, the Secretary of State's office certifies, along with the Elections Commission of the United States, the equipment that can be used for our systems. And there are a number of systems that are certified the one that we believe is the one that should be used is that one that offers a paper record for you to be able to look at and verify that your vote was recorded properly as you wanted it to be. As you recall, there were some issues previously with some state party ticket.
Right. Let me go over and switch real quickly to Max Feldman to help us. Sure. At the federal level, the Democratic-controlled Congress is trying to pass a law that would make changes. Real quick.
Yeah, that's right. So H.R. 1 includes a variety of security provisions, including a paper, auditable paper record. And, that reform is critical. The cybersecurity issues that have come up in the past few years are a real threat to our democracy, and we need to address them by guaranteeing that voting machines produce a paper record that can be checked after the election to verify the vote total.
And H.R. 1 was DOA when it went over to the Senate side on Capitol Hill. I do want to mention that here in Bexar County, they are preparing to buy a whole bunch of new voting machines that will print out paper records for Bexar County voters and also will allow for countywide voting, which means that you no longer will have to go to your local precinct, that you'll be able to vote anywhere in Bexar County on Election Day, which will be a big change. So I want to thank all of our guests, Walt Wilson, the Associate Professor at the Department of Political Science at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Thank you so much, Walt. Cindy Weatherby is a Voting Rights and Elections Law Issues Chair for the League of Women Voters of Texas. And Max Feldman, he's a counsel in the Democracy Program at the Brenham Center for Justice, where he focuses on voting rights and elections. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.